Welcome to the Deep Dive. This is where we take a whole stack of sources, research papers, articles, notes, you name it, and really boil it down for you.
Yeah, we try to find those key insights, the surprising bits you might miss.
Exactly. Giving you that shortcut to being properly informed, maybe with a bit of entertainment along the way.
Hopefully.
So today we're diving into a really fascinating piece of public art. It's Henry Moore's Reclining Connected Form at Trinity College Dublin.
Mm-hmm.
We've pulled together some great material looking at the sculpture, of course, but also the artist's vision, why its specific location matters so much, and the whole story behind how Trinity acquired it.
That institutional patronage angle is quite interesting.
It is. So our mission today, for you listening, is to get a handle on this artwork, not just as, you know, a big bronze thing, but as something that's actively in conversation with its surroundings, the history, the architecture, and how it symbolizes a certain kind of cultural foresight.
That's a great way to put it, because it really is much more than just the metal object. It speaks volumes about how art connects to place and, well, purpose. It makes you want to look closer, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I'm really looking forward to getting into the surprising facts and all those layers of meaning.
Okay.
Let's unpack this.
Yeah.
So, first impressions. You walk into Library Square at Trinity, behind the Campanile, and there it is. Bronze sculpture, officially titled Reclining Connected Form, made in 1969.
Right, quite prominent.
But interestingly, while that's the official name, people often call it other things. You hear connected forms, sometimes reclining forms.
And those names, you know, they're not just mistakes or casual shorthand. They actually tell us something.
Ooh, how so?
Well, they sort of highlight the ambiguous nature of abstract art, right? The fact that people grasp the core ideas connection, reclining shapes, even with different names, suggests the sculpture is working. It's communicating something universal, even if the label varies.
That's a neat way to think about it. And Moore himself, he was quite clear about the meaning he intended. He said it brings together three big themes from his work.
Yeah, the mother with child, the reclining figure, which is maybe his most famous motif.
And large form protecting small form. He directly linked it to human feelings, primary instincts, and specifically the need of protection.
Mm-hmm.
Powerful stuff.
Visually, it strikes you immediately. It's this beautiful modernist shape against all that classical architecture in the square. The curvy bronze form versus the very geometric stone base it sits on.
And the placement itself is key. It's deliberately off-center.
Right. It creates this slightly unbalanced feeling in the square.
Exactly. And that's not an accident. It's a calculated move artistically and architecturally. It actually encourages you, kind of subtly draws you away from the main thoroughfare of Parliament Square into this quieter, greener space.
So it changes how you experience Library Square itself.
Precisely. It turns the square into this arena where the historical buildings in this modern piece are in dialogue. It activates the space. Okay, so let's talk about the artist behind it. Henry Moore, born 1898, died 1986. Huge figure in 20th century British sculpture.
Absolutely massive and incredibly determined from a young age. Apparently decided he wanted to be a sculptor when he was just 11, inspired by Michelangelo, no less.
Wow, and his background coming from a coal mining town in Yorkshire.
Oh.
That seems important.
Very. He grew up around physical work, understanding materials. This fed directly into his idea of material truth and why he championed direct carving.
What did he mean by direct carving?
Basically working straight onto the stone or wood, responding to the material itself, letting its character and his own interaction with it come through, not just imposing a pre-planned idea from a clay model necessarily.
That makes sense. And then there's his experience in World War I. He fought at Cambrai, was even caught in a gas attack. You mentioned protection as a theme.
Yes, and it's hard not to see a connection there. That direct experience of conflict, of vulnerability, the sheer need for safety, it almost certainly informed his later explorations of protection, shelter, the internal versus the external.
Alongside that, he had artistic influences, of course. Modern artists.
Right. Cézanne, Van Gogh, Gauguin were important. But also, really crucially, non-Western art, what was then often called primitive art.
And there was one piece in particular.
Yes, a real turning point was seeing a pre-Columbian Aztec sculpture in Paris, a Shakmul figure.
Oh, the reclining figure.
Exactly. This semi-abstract reclining form had a massive impact and became a cornerstone of his work. He wasn't interested in traditional idealized bodies. He wanted something more elemental, more connected to the earth and raw human experience.
So his whole philosophy seemed to be about exploring shape and form in a fundamental way.
Mm-hmm.
He said, The whole of nature is an endless demonstration of shape and form.
Mm-hmm. He saw humanity as part of nature, not separate from it. And he wanted his sculptures to tap into that connection, to give viewers a sensory link to something timeless, universal.
He was quite rigorous about it too, wasn't he? Studying biology.
Oh, yes. He really delved into morphology, looking at how things grow, bones, shells, tree roots. You can see in his drawings, like the transformation drawings, where he'd explore how an object changes completely depending on how you look at it. Almost scientific in his approach to form.
And here's something I find fascinating. His view on public sculpture. He didn't want it just looked at.
No, absolutely not. He actively wanted people to interact with his large pieces,
yeah.
To touch them, even climb on them, explore them physically.
He had that great quote about a child learning roundness.
From handling a ball far more than from looking at it.
Exactly. He wanted that tactile engagement. It's a way of making abstract forms feel real, relatable, grounded in physical experience.
Which makes so much sense for large public works. So let's bring that back specifically to reclining connected form at Trinity. We know it's bronze, about 2.2 meters long.
Yes, and part of an addition Trinity has number one of 9 casts, actually. And it's heavy, over 900 kilograms, very substantial piece.
And compositionally, you see those two distinct forms you mentioned earlier. Right, you have the larger outer shape that seems to curve around and embrace the smaller inner one. It's a classic example of more exploring that relationship, that dichotomy between internal and external forms.
The outer one feels more rounded, voluminous.
Generally, yes. While the inner one tends to be a bit sharper, more angular in parts, it creates a visual tension.
And we know Moore linked it to those three themes: mother and child, the reclining figure, and protection. That idea of a maternal figure holding a child seems quite strong here.
It does, visually. The large form enclosing the smaller one definitely suggests that protective embrace.
But is it straightforward protection? You mentioned complexity earlier.
Well, when you look really closely, the relationship isn't entirely simple or comforting. The inner form seems almost wedged in, precariously placed, maybe even hanging off the outer form.
So not fully nestled.
Not quite. And parts of the inner form have these sharp, almost thorn-like points where you might expect, say, arms or softer curves. It introduces a subtle element of threat or maybe tension.
So the protection isn't absolute. It hints at vulnerability, maybe dependency.
Exactly. It adds this psychological depth. It makes you question the nature of that protection. Is it nurturing or is it confining? Or perhaps both. It resonates potentially with those deeper, perhaps darker life experiences, like his time in the war.
And the reclining figure itself is just so quintessentially Moore. Kept coming back to it.
Absolutely. Ever since seeing that Jacquemot and also drawing inspiration from painters like Cézanne, particularly his bathers, it was a form he used to explore volume, space, the relationship between the figure and the landscape.
You mentioned space. The holes in his sculptures are important too, aren't they?
Hugely important. He famously said, "The first hole made through a piece of stone is a revelation." The openings aren't just gaps, they're part of the form. They let light through, connect the internal and external, invite you to look through the sculpture as well as at it, creates multiple viewpoints.
And the connection to nature seems unavoidable with Moore.
Always. He drew constantly from natural forms, pebbles, bones, hills. He even likened one of his earlier reclining figures, the recumbent figure from 1938, to the rolling hills of the English landscape.
So reclining connected form, even though it's abstract, could be seen almost like a landscape feature.
Yes, definitely. The outer form particularly has this cave-like quality, as if shaped by natural forces like wind or water. It allows the human form to kind of merge with natural forms. Biomorphic abstraction, they call it.
Creating a sort of universal language.
I think so. And that connection is emphasized by the contrast with the very man-made geometric plinth it sits on. Nature and construction and dialogue again.
Okay, so Moore's intention is clear. But the setting, Library Square, is just as crucial, isn't it? Tell us about that space.
It really is. Library Square has its own rich history. It wasn't always this open space. Until the 1830s, it was actually an enclosed quadrangle.
Oh, really? Like a front square?
Kind of, yeah. Then this architect, Decimus Burton, proposed opening it up, creating what many now consider one of the finest academic squares anywhere. The sheer scale of the old library really anchors it.
So the square itself is a designed landscape, not just an empty space.
Absolutely. It's curated. And think about the buildings around the sculpture. You've got the old library, early 18th century, imposing, classical, built from Irish limestone and granite.
A real heavyweight.
Definitely. Then, almost directly opposite in time and style, you have the Berkeley Library.
Completed in 1967, just before the sculpture arrived. That's the Brutalist one.
That's right. An amazing example of Irish Brutalism, considered a really important modern building. You can see the patterns from the wooden formwork used to cast the concrete, a technique associated with Le Corbusier.
So you have classical and Brutalist architecture facing off,
yeah.
And other buildings too.
Yes, the museum building from the 1850s with its very distinctive Venetian Gothic style and the campanile right there in the middle of things, visually.
So into this mix, Moore's sculpture arrives. You described it as a modernist foil.
Yes, it acts as a counterpoint to both the classical old library and the stark geometry of the Berkeley. And again, that off-center placement is key. It feels unbalanced, but in a really appealing way.
It draws you into the quieter part of the square.
Exactly. It invites contemplation, slows you down, it makes you engage with the space differently.
Which fits perfectly with Moore's idea about landscape settings enhancing his work.
Precisely. He wanted natural features, or in this case, the architectural landscape, to set off how his sculptures are seen. The curving bronze becomes this organic element, almost like a found natural object or a body, nestled within the rigid lines of the surrounding architecture.
It's not just a clash, then?
No, it's more sophisticated. It's about introducing fluidity, a humanistic presence, an organic counter-narrative into this very formal academic setting. It mediates between the different styles.
Okay, so the placement is perfect. How did it actually get there? The acquisition story?
Right, so Trinity acquired reclining connected form in 1971. And interestingly, the source says it was donated by the artist, with support from TCD, which suggests a real collaboration.
Trinity College Dublin, TCD.
Yes. And there's a bit of backstory here that's quite telling. A few years earlier, in 1967, another major Moore sculpture, The King and Queen, was temporarily shown at Trinity.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, but Moore wasn't happy with where they put it. He felt it conflicted with some lanterns in the forecourt and, crucially, didn't get enough sunlight.
That really shows how much sight mattered to him. He wasn't just handing over a piece.
Not at all. He was deeply invested in how it would be seen and experienced. So the fact that they later reached an agreement on the Library Square location for a reclining connected form suggests Trinity really listened. Particularly Professor George Dawson, who seems to have been instrumental.
They worked with Moore to find the right spot.
It seems so. And this all happened during a really interesting time for Trinity, a period of significant modernist ambition.
Modern art wasn't always a focus there, was it?
No, the idea of building a modern art collection really kicked off around 1959-60. And surprisingly, it was spearheaded by Professor George Dawson, who was actually professor of genetics, along with student support.
A scientist leading the charge for modern art. That's fantastic.
Isn't it? They started initiatives like a college gallery picture hire scheme just to get modern art seen and appreciated on campus. And then a formal art education program began in 66.
And the Berkeley Library playing a role too.
Yes. When it opened in 67, it wasn't just a library. It had a purpose-built exhibition hall. This was a big deal.
What kind of things did they show?
Groundbreaking stuff for Ireland at the time. In 1969, they hosted the first ever exhibition of Pablo Picasso's work in the country. That showed real ambition, a willingness to engage with challenging contemporary art that maybe other institutions weren't ready for.
And that led eventually to the Douglas Hyde Gallery.
Yes, which opened in 1978, again, heavily championed by Dawson. He was clearly a driving force.
So getting a major Henry Moore sculpture fits right into that narrative.
Absolutely. Acquiring a piece by arguably the most famous living sculptor in the world at that time, a leading modernist, was a massive statement. It showed Trinity integrating modern art right into its historical heart, positioning itself as a forward-thinking cultural leader in Ireland.
The sculpture itself becomes a symbol of that whole vision.
Exactly. It's a tangible piece of evidence of Trinity's cultural policy and ambition during that era.
Right. So let's try and pull this all together.
Yeah.
After this deep dive, what are the key takeaways for someone thinking about this sculpture?
Well, I think first you see how reclining connected form really embodies Moore's core artistic concerns, his exploration of form, internal-external dynamics, but also those deep human themes of protection, vulnerability, or connection to nature.
And his belief in art being something you experience, not just look at. That tactile quality.
Definitely. Then there's the site specificity. It's not just a sculpture. It's that sculpture in that place. It's conversation with the old library, the Berkeley Library, how it changes the feel of Library Square. That's crucial.
It actively shapes your experience of the place. It's not passive.
Precisely. It creates that dynamic tension, makes the space more contemplative. And finally, the acquisition story itself tells us a lot.
About Trinity's vision at the time.
Yes. About its role as a patron of modern art, its ambition to be a cultural leader, willing to play something quite radical within its historic setting. It speaks volumes about institutional foresight.
It's a multi-layered story. Sculpture, artist, place, and institution all intertwined.
Beautifully put.
So maybe a final thought for you listening. Think about that theme more highlighted. The need of protection. How fundamental is that feeling in our lives?
And then consider how a piece of abstract bronze, through its shape, its weight, its relationship to the forms around it, can evoke that complex universal emotion so powerfully.
What is it about art, maybe this piece specifically, that resonates with you? How does it reveal something about human experience, or perhaps about the hidden stories of a place like Trinity? Something to ponder.